Today, May 20, 2003, and kick it off, members, first with work session on HCR 10, and then we will have a public hearing on, and possible work session on Senate Bill 419, and then we will end it with a work session on Senate Bill 516. So with that, let's open the work session on HCR 10. And, Mr. Anderson, will you have some amendments for us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Bruce Anderson with the House Speaker's Office. And I wanted to comment on the Dash 3 amendments to HCR 10, just to explain those a bit to you. We had put together the language for the resolution, and in some follow-up conversations with the family, Ms. Harmon's mother, actually, there was a little bit of clarification to provide on Ms. Harmon's work with respect to the issue of breast cancer and breast cancer awareness and so forth, as in terms of how kind of her, how she kind of viewed that issue and how she dealt with it as Miss America and so forth. So that, the additional language there, lines 1 and 2 of the Dash 3 will deal with that. And then as we also got into this a little bit more with some other parties, there was this issue that, we really didn't say much in the resolution with respect to her commitment and support for education, which has been a very important part of her, was a very important part of her term as Miss America, as well as her running for Miss America. So, hence the additional whereas language on lines 4 through 8 of the Dash 3 amendments, and that denotes her her attendance at Saturday Academy. She's a graduate of Centennial High School, and she's attended Portland State University. And then, really, through all of that, her support for opportunity scholarships, which was one of her items that she supported and noted in terms of the whole Miss America program. So. All right, thank you, and appreciate your support, and I'd be open to any questions.
Any questions? And do you happen to know, Mr. Anderson, Saturday Academy, does that include her kindergarten?
Mr. Chairman, I believe I'm a little bit fuzzy on that, but I believe that's a program that she attended. I may be mistaken on this point. I'd have to look at my notes on that, but I think that may be the one that she attended at OHSU, but I'm just not really positive on that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. We are in work session. Representative Flores?
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the Dash 3 amendments to House concurrent Resolution 10.
And Representative Flores has moved adoption of the Dash 3 amendments. Any discussion? Seeing none, so ordered. We need to stand at ease.
Alrighty.
Take the vote. Then back on the record. Again, in work session on HCR 10, Representative Flores.
Mr. Chair, I move HCR 10 to the floor with a be adopted as amended recommendation.
Representative Flores has moved HCR 10 to the floor with a be adopted as amended recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, clerk, please call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Close.
Aye.
Representative Morris.
Aye.
Representative Lewis Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Burson.
Aye.
And Chair Doyle.
And Chair votes aye. And we will have Speaker Minnis carry the bill. And that H.R. 10 is moved to the floor with the adopted recommendation. And we are closing the work session on H.R. 10. And once again, stand at ease. Now, public hearing on Senate Bill 419. Cindy Roberts. And Bob Danko, you might as well come forward as well.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert. I work for the big guy in the back, and we represent the Oregon Dry Cleaners Association. I apologize. I would have brought you some written testimony. I had no idea that I was in this position today, but I'm proud to be here and proud to talk to you about the changes that have been made to this legislation and the statute that's been around since 1995. In 1995, we worked with the DEQ and the Dry Cleaners Association and even tried to work with the Korean Association to come up with some kind of environmental response account to pay for environmental cleanup of dry cleaning spills. The bill that we passed came up with a methodology based on a facility charge, per gallon tax on PERC, that's the cleaning solvent, and fines for noncompliance from release of solvents. The dry cleaners pay into this fund and in turn are given some liability relief. So far, the legislation has worked well, but we came back in 1999 and tried to address one major issue that we've had, and that was that we were not raising the $1 million the DEQ believes is necessary to clean up the amount of spills that have actually occurred. So in 1999, Senate Bill 1098 was introduced, and we tried to come up with a new formula. But this was the first time, actually, that at that time, Representative Steve Harper got involved, and we all could not come to an agreement. So we made some little changes to the legislation, but nothing significant. We did not solve our funding problems. So we came back in 2001. And now Mr. Harper, by then, is a state senator, and he's working with us again to reach this goal of raising $1 million. We changed it through Senate Bill 463. We changed statute to put the $1 million requirement into statute. Before, it was just an idea. Raised the fees 25% per year if the goal was not reached, increased the gallon tax, deleted some quarterly payments, and did some other things. We thought all was well. We all went home. So in 2003, we came together because we all had the same concern. It was the first time we all came to the table with the same concerns and the same solution. In this case, it was the fact that a lot of times, insurance policies that had been purchased were not being looked to pay for contamination. So we wanted to make sure that before our dry cleaner went to the fund looking for financial help in cleaning up a spill, they first looked back to see if they had insurance policies that they were paying into during the time of the spill. That was the purpose of the bill as we first came to the session. DEQ, Senator Harper, Oregon Dry Clean Alliance, we all agreed that that's what we were here to do. But along the way, some changes occurred. And some of those changes we did not agree upon. Some of them we did. And I'm happy to say that as the bill has come to you, Anne Gross, Senator Harper's leadership made us all sit down at a table and come to some agreements. So not only are we going to deal with the issues that we originally came to the table with, but are going to solve the million-dollar problem we've been having. So we're hoping not to be here next session. We've been here every session since 95. We're hoping not to be here next session, although that, of course, means a loss of a client for Roger and I. But this is what this bill does. Make sure that you check with your insurance. Sets up a program where the advisory group that's set up under DQ, the advisory group to this program, is going to monitor the costs of the DQ, how much money they're spending, and prioritize and set other goals. Number three, it transfers the revenue collection from the Department of Revenue to the DEQ. We're hoping that that's going to result in some cost savings. And number four, it changes the financial aspects in that if it's a $500 fee on each store, $500 extra fee if you've been using PERC after 1998, I believe it is, adds the increases to 1% gross receipts tax, and also includes a solvent tax. And then number five, the final thing it does is repeal the sunset date. The whole statute, when we put it in 1995, actually it was not amended until 1999 to have a sunset, but the whole program was to go away. And we talked about it and decided that now that we think we have a funding formula that works, the best thing to do is to assure the longevity of the program and the security of those small businessmen who are participating in this program, that the program will indeed be around. So we're all very happy with the bill. I think it goes a lot further than what we came in here to do, and the Dry Cleaning Association would thank Bob Danko for working with us, and Dick Peterson, and most importantly, Senator Harper. And I know I talk fast. Are there any questions?
Any questions? Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your discussions over the years, have you discussed the process that DEQ will go through once the contamination is found? In other words, are they going to be coming back for several years checking and testing and charging you for that testing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, I don't think that's how it's supposed to work. I think that there's a very succinct program that is followed by the DEQ, but I would leave that to Mr. Danko to answer for you.
Mr. Chair, Representative, for the record, I'm Bob Danko with the Department of Environmental Quality. Our cleanup process, hopefully for dry cleaners, doesn't result in us going back and back and back. It's actually a voluntary program. The dry cleaners step forward and apply to be part of this program, and then we work with them and agree upon how to go through the cleanup. And the result of the cleanup is a letter from us, a no further action letter, which from then on, meaning that the contamination has been addressed and they're basically free from then on. So I don't think we've been doing this since, you know, the mid-90s in the dry cleaner program, and I think it's worked out pretty well. Those sites that have come to us and wanted to be closed have been closing.
Okay. So once the contamination is cleaned up, they get a letter from you saying that it's been taken care of, and you don't go back a year later and test.
Mr. Chair, Representative, not to my knowledge. But once you receive your no further action letter, it means just that. There could be, of course, maybe new contamination or something changes, but you get the no further action letter. That is what the whole idea of doing the cleanup is to do, is get that letter. So then you're free to manage your property, to sell your property, and so on.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Follow up, sure.
Is there some concern? Tell me what your concern is when you have a contamination. Is it that there will be any runoff that would go into the water supply? What is your concern?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the concern may be different at various sites. So no two sites are the same. But our cleanup process now is based on risk. And so it's basically either the risk is transferred to people or the environment through contamination of the soil, through contamination of the water, through flood water, and so on. So you first identify what's causing the risk, and then you address it to risk. Sometimes a cleanup, for instance, say in an industrial area, doesn't mean that you remove all of the contamination. What you do is you address that risk from that contamination, and therefore from then on, it's okay to use that site even if some of the contamination is present. I kind of think of it as controlling the contamination. For instance, sometimes contamination will be in the soil, and if we come up with a cost-effective solution of paving over the top of it, that will eliminate the risk because no more rainwater can get down to the contamination and leach it out.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Further questions? Representative Flores.
Thank you. Is this primarily focused at accidental spills, or is it a part of the routine process in the dry cleaning industry?
Mr. Chair, Representative Flores, I think we'd like to think they're all accidental, but of course that element does not even come into play when it comes to this liability. One of the things that might help answer that question, as well as yours, Representative Berger, is that this bill not only gives the liability relief, it also sets forth new requirements when it comes to education to the dry cleaners on how to run their business and make it environmentally friendly, mechanical rules as far as what kind of equipment they have to have. And it also details solvent change rules. And soon you'll see no more perks. So another spill happening at the same location, probably not. And in Representative Flores' question, the possibility of someone intentionally doing it or accidentally doing it, the chemicals aren't going to be the same anymore, and I don't think you'll see this problem in the future.
Okay. Representative Flores?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to ask our DEQ representative. We did have a bill last session that went through Water and Environment on dry cleaning. I was trying to remember exactly what piece of this puzzle that was. Do you remember that bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I do remember that bill because I dealt with it also. It was Senate Bill 463. Did that make it over to your committee?
It was also Senator Harper.
Right. That bill actually is the one that made some minor changes and directed DEQ to look at prioritizing the cleanup sites, but it also set the sunset date for the entire law of January 1, 2006. And that was done really to, force the people involved to take a good look at that, of the law. And we thought at that time in the 2005 session. It just so happens because, as Cindy pointed out with the question about insurance, that we got together and were able to make the changes that when in 2001 we talked about them, we were able to agree upon the best way to do it this time instead of waiting for 2005. And I think that's why all of us are strongly supportive of the bill, because, like she said, we hope not to be back here in 2005.
Thank you.
Further questions? Okay, I'm still having some difficulty on page 5 with the imposition of the fees. The section one that's highlighted in bold shows the assessment based on whether solvents were used before or after January 1, 98. And then on section two, that's the I guess the letter you were talking about, Mr. Danko, that if they get a clean bill on no other no release of solvents, then they, when you're saying they may be permanently exempted, how does that happen? How do they become permanently exempted? Is that going to be by rule? And then two, what triggers the credits of the $1,000 that's there in section, subsection B?
Good point. Good question.
Mr. Chair, I'll take a crack at answering that. Actually, that isn't the letter I was referring to, That is an important addition to the bill that you're calling our attention to. And it's interesting, and I think it goes back to legislative counsel on how they've chosen to use the word may and use the word shall. And Cindy, you help me out if I'm way off here. But in our minds, that's a shall, but that's the way they do that drafting.
Mr. Chair, this section that you're referring to, section 2, is actually a letter that happens after you've had an assessment, and the assessment shows that there is no problem. It's a different letter, and the reason it's a may instead of shall or may be permanently exempted is because some facilities will choose not to be. Some facilities who have not maybe been up to code as quickly as they wanted to be or changed their machines as quickly as they wanted to be or stopped using PERC after 1998 may want to continue to pay into it in case a spill is found later. That has happened before. So that's why it's only a permanent exemption under certain circumstances. And as we see it, those circumstances would be, say, a new facility in a new location up to date on their technology and their solvent use, then they could, in fact, apply for a permanent exemption. But it does come down to whether or not the owner decides whether they want to be free of the liability or not.
Mr. Chair, it's a shell to us, but her explanation is I think, correct.
Okay. My understanding, just from other members may correct me, but my understanding is that the only time may equals shall is when it's followed by the word not.
Correct.
So
that shows my ignorance, yeah. Mr. Chair.
There is a difference, though. It is, you know.
Mr. Chair, I think the fact that this is may be permanently exempted is because it is a choice.
That's permissive.
Okay. And then can you explain getting the credit back that's there in 2 sub B? And what? How do they call? I mean, how do they get $1,000 credit back on the... I'm assuming that's a maximum amount.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they can put in basically more than $1,000, as I read section 1A and B, because it's an annual fee.
Right, Mr. Chair, you could have paid much more than that, but the fact is you may have put in for an assessment and be found to be clean and not want the liability insurance anymore, and you've already paid for a number of years, and all this is saying is you can apply to the department to have a refund of part of that money. This is really to address the fact, please forgive me, Mr. Danko, that sometimes things don't go as fast as we'd like them to. And I think that's why this credit is, there's an application process for it. The application would be to the DEQ. It would be handled through rules. But I think that was a way of letting people know that, hey, we don't want you to pay into this if you really don't belong here. But until you find out for sure, please pay into it.
Okay, and then just to go then one more step here on subsection 3, to me I think it is notwithstanding what was up above, but there will also then be an annual fee. Just every dry cleaner is going to be charged this annual fee that's 1% of gross revenue?
Yes, Mr. Chair, 1%.
So then is that in addition, or would the...
In addition to the annual fee... and in addition to the PERC penalty, if you have used PERC after 1988, and in addition to the PERC gallonage fee and other solvent fees. There's a lot of fees here, but that 1% is what's going to garner the $1 million that we need.
Okay, and do you have a sense of our most, is there an average that you know of gross revenue for dry cleaners? I mean, what a store would generate? And how much in fees are we talking about here?
Mr. Chair, I'd hate to say what a average would be, because I know that some stores, we actually had an opt-out for ones that made a minimum amount previously. Some would tell you they're making $25,000. Some we know are making well into the $100,000s at their stores. As far as what the fee is to most of these stores, I think that our dry cleaner president or legislative chair who worked on this bill is paying about $2,000 a year previous to this bill. So it would probably put him up to, say, $5,000 a year. Mr. Chair, I could get you those numbers if those make you feel more comfortable. You should know, however, that the Oregon Dry Cleaners Association does represent most of the dry cleaners in the state, along with the Dry Cleaners Alliance, who Senator Harper is a part of. And the members of those two associations did vote to tax themselves this way. So while we appreciate anyone's concern on how much money we're charging ourselves, I think that all the business people thought it was a doable amount without having to pass it along to our customers.
And then you said that this was being used to raise the $1 million, but most likely you're going to go beyond that.
Mr. Chair, that would be fabulous if we could. That would mean more cleanup. Last session, when the Senate bill was in Representative Close's committee, the purpose was to make it so that the fees automatically increased 25% per year if the $1 million was not reached. That was activated, that 25% increase, this session, this year, but it just penciling out the numbers, it still would not get us to another $1 million next year, so we'd have to increase another 25%. That ends up being difficult for your businessmen in the industry to calculate and understand over a long term. So setting a more sure rate was something we felt, even though it's slightly higher, setting a more steady rate instead of increasing 25% every year was something that we felt the people in the industry would like.
Okay. Further questions? Representative Barnhart.
In the same section, page 5, line 33, there's a reference to gross revenue does not include revenues of a dry cleaning facility received for services to a dry store not owned or operated by the dry cleaning facility. What is a dry store?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think it's defined, but our understanding is, and the way when we first wrote this bill to exempt the dry stores, is those are stores that you drop off your dry cleaning at that don't actually do the dry cleaning there. As a matter of fact, representatives, you have a service here where a dry cleaning company comes and gets your dry cleaning, if you'd like, and takes it to the dry cleaner store. I believe that company itself does not furnish the cleaning of those garments, but rather takes it to another dry cleaning store.
I found the definition.
Yeah.
Thank you. Page 10, line 28. Oh, thank you. I'll try to look these up myself.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you were putting this together, I guess my question goes to the gentleman with the DEQ. Do you feel that you're treating everyone fairly equitably in this? I mean, you deal with a lot of different small businesses. Many of them use different kinds of chemicals. Was that taken into consideration?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, although we at DEQ kind of took a step back and wanted the dry cleaners themselves to come together on how to rearrange the fees. So we basically stepped back and let them do that. And it's interesting. It's my opinion that I think this fee schedule is maybe easier or better for a smaller dry cleaner. But that maybe is my opinion. But in the discussions, for instance, Senator Harper was very careful to make sure that it was equitable amongst all the dry cleaners, and we, DEQ, let all the dry cleaners work this out.
Mr. Chair, Representative, actually, the Dry Cleaners Association, to be honest with you, came into this whole program not wanting a gross receipts tax. We wanted flat fees per almost a step in revenue for different dry cleaners. But upon convincing by Senator Harper and others, it came to our attention that a 1% gross receipts tax truly was the fairest way so that we were sure not to burden some of the smaller dry cleaners, especially those in rural areas. And Representative, if Mr. Chair, if I might, I do have an example here of the dry cleaning fees and how much they are on stores. And they go, from our examples and the pieces we worked out, anywhere from $1,800 all the way up to about $4,000.
Further questions? Okay, thank you. Appreciate your testimony. No one else is scheduled to testify on this, so we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 419, open up a work session on Senate Bill 419. Representative Flores.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 419A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Flores has moved Senate Bill 419A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Berger.
Mr. Chairman, I honestly don't like the bill, but I suppose if the dry cleaners want to do it to themselves, then I don't know how you can argue with that. But if I were a dry cleaner, I would have a few more questions to ask.
Thank you. Further comments? Representative Flores.
Just a comment. I guess I would concur with that in the sense that if the players want to have that in position in order to raise the funds, it's better than me having to impose it on them. So.
Representative Barnhart.
I think what they're trying to do here is to manage a serious potential risk and liability, and this is what they've come up with is the fund for managing it. So I'm hard pressed to object to that if that's what they want to do in dealing with what could be a potentially difficult, devastating problem for one of them to get caught out.
Another discussion? Not being one that really is interested in this kind of legislation, typically I defer to the tax and spend liberal Senator Harper is. But there's obviously justification for this because of his more intimate knowledge of this business, and I'm happy to give a courtesy vote to give it out. Not even to get it out, but as chair of the committee, I have no problem doing that, but I'm still reserving the right to vote against it on the floor. No other discussion? Let's call the roll.
Representative Backlund.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Close.
Both aye.
Representative Forrest.
Aye.
Representative Melissa Anderson. Representative Berger.
By courtesy, aye.
And Chair Doyle.
And Chair votes aye as well. And Senate Bill 419 passes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Carrier, anybody interested in carrying? Well, looks like we had unanimity, didn't we? So, any objection to the consent calendar? No objection. Seeing none, so ordered. And we can close the work session then on Senate Bill 419 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 516. And members, we do have amendments for you for Senate Bill 516. Presented to you is the dash B8 amendments. And let's see, why don't we ask Ronald Levy to come forward and explain these amendments?
Yes.
And maybe Mr. Levy, you can also explain why this bill's to Rules Committee after being referred from before.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I am Harlan Levy, staff attorney with the Oregon Association of Realtors. This bill comes back to you from the floor after having been referred from the House Water and Land Use Committee. The vote was 6-1 in that committee. Due pass recommendation. After the bill went to the floor, we noticed there were a couple of Scrivener's errors in the bill. You see two of those two errors are fixed in the dash B8 amendments at lines 1 and 3 of those amendments. Replaces the number 3 with the number 2, and then adds the word may. Then after we had requested that from Legislative Council, we also learned from Legislative Council that there was another bill, House Bill 2278, that's been making its way through the process, that this bill, Senate Bill 516, had some conflicts with. So these amendments now resolve those conflicts as well. In a nutshell, what the bill does is it deals with the land use notification process when local governments, LCDC or Metro, changes their land use, does what's known as a rezone. This requires ballot measure 56, which passed by the voters a few years ago and with overwhelming support, requires that notification be mailed to individual landowners. This bill fixes some of the issues that were raised after that ballot measure passed. In particular, one of the things that it does that's most important to our members is it requires that LCDC and Metro actually mail their notice before they adopt the new administrative rule or ordinance. Existing law, they're only required to do it after they've already done so. Also changes some of the language within the notice to make it a little more accurate. Also has some other things in there that the local jurisdictions had asked for. In particular, it allows Metro to go ahead and notify landowners by themselves without having to go through the local governments. Apparently, they have a better database than some of the jurisdictions that they govern over. And this bill just is basically does some other housekeeping things that the cities and counties had asked for as well. So we would ask that you adopt the Dash B8 amendments and respectfully request that you move the bill to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Representative Berger.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. There's a process in place within the 30 days. I apologize, I haven't read it that close. They have to, for instance, if real property of an owner be rezoned, then they're notified at least 30 days prior to the effective date. Is there a process by which that landowner has any say in the 30 days?
Yes, Chair Doyle, Representative Verger. What happens is a landowner gets notified, and then if they want to participate in the process, they will show up at a public hearing and say their piece. This gives them an opportunity to do that before the actual change is implemented. Under existing law, they don't get that notice beforehand if it's an LCDC administrative rule or a metro ordinance. So this bill front loads the notification to the landowner. Gives them a chance to participate in the actual rulemaking.
Follow up?
Chairman, I would just like to make a comment. I really believe that that is a big improvement in our process. I believe that in the case where people are notified without giving them any warning at all, which is, I believe, the way it is at present, that you're just notified that that change is taking place or has taken place. I feel like that in a way that victimizes people who own property, and I really believe that this is a good move in the right direction.
Thank you.
Okay, further discussion or further comments, questions, Mr. Levy? We're some close.
Thank you. Harlan, on page 2 of the Dash 8 amendment, you're removing a lot of language, and this was part of the ballot measure, I believe, the language. And I'm assuming the problem was reducing the value of the property. Is that correct?
Chair Doyle, Representative Close, yes, we changed that language because there are situations where a rezone does not result in a reduction, may in fact result in an appreciation of your property. For example, if an urban growth boundary is moved to include your property and you're brought inside, your property value has gone up. So we think that the word change is more accurate than the word reduce.
Follow up.
But I just want to point out that may reduce the value is also true because it says may reduce.
Chair Doyle, Representative Close, that is true. Yes.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you, Mr. Levy.
Thank you.
Let's see. We had no others. No, it's on. Okay. We are in work session. Representative Flores.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the B8 amendments.
Representative Flores has moved adoption of the B8 amendments to Senate Bill 516. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Representative Flores.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 516B to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Flores has moved Senate Bill 516B to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Barnhart.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to vote for the motion. I want to note that it's at least in part in deference to the decision by the Committee on Environment and Land Use to send the bill to the floor in the first place. There's a lot about this bill that I don't understand very well, and I'm not sure that it is worth taking the time to understand it thoroughly, given that we've already got a committee, substantive committee, who have done that job. But I'm deferring to them when I vote yes.
Thank you. Other comments? Seeing none, we'll call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Rick Hayden Close.
What's on?
Rick Hayden Flores.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Representative Ron Sanderson's excused. And we will have Representative Richardson carry this once again. And work session for Senate Bill 516 is closed. And nothing further, colleagues. We are adjourned. Thank you.